Suavemente, Suavemente. That was Suavemente by Elvis Crespo. But we don't do music here. It's 10 p.m. on a Thursday. EST, I don't have to say it, but I will. You're listening to WMUC-FM College Park 90.5. And as it is 10 p.m. on a Thursday, that's when the FTC turns off their headphones and they go to sleep. Or the FCC. As it is 10 p.m. on a Thursday, that means it is Moral Hazard on 10 p.m. on a Thursday, 10 to 11 p.m. every Thursday at EST until I graduate and I get a real job. And then you will be left out here alone. You, dear listener, dearest listener, you might be wondering yourself, what is Moral Hazard? What is this thing that keeps coming on at 10 p.m. on every Thursday? And it's a guy yelling about some stuff and I don't pay attention, but you're going to pay attention to this. Moral Hazard. All right, it's 2026. The world is changing. The world. And I promise I will tell you what you're listening to. I will tell you what Moral Hazard is. But you have to hear me out first. It's 2026. The world is changing. We've got TV stars running DHS. We've got, you know, Pam Bondi. She's cute. Pam Bondi's cute, but is she evil? All right. Is she? I mean, you know. Look. I was watching the House committee, the House panel interviewing Pam Bondi. All right. I get it. But I mean, you know, she's evil. She's evil and she's not good. You can't be speaking for the White House as, you know, as Attorney General. You can't be going up and speaking for the White House when you can't really speak all that well. I mean, what'd you get your law school degree for? What'd you get your law degree for? You're going to go up there and you're going to talk some nonsense. You're going to have 11 people stand up behind you. Cameraman's getting a special flick to put on the front page of Wall Street Journal. You're just going to sit there. I mean, come on, Pam Bondi. Pam Bondi is the United States Attorney General. She was interviewed by, I believe it was the House. Lawmakers were interviewing her with friend of the show, Jeffrey Epstein. It was a hearing before the House committee, and they grilled her over the fact that Jeffrey Epstein is rampant, and he was everywhere. He was prolific within the upper echelons of American society and elsewhere. I mean, he was friends with Walter Mandelson. He was getting state secrets from Walter Mandelson, the UK's ambassador to the United States. He was everywhere. And the question is, why aren't you interviewing victims? Why aren't you doing anything about this guy? Why are you kind of brushing it under the rug? And what did she say in response? She brushed it under the rug. I mean, she just said, Pam Bondi, friend of the show, Pam Bondi, honestly, a brilliant legal mind, one of the greatest legal minds I ever have known, Pam Bondi. She goes up and she does nothing. She does an old song and dance routine. It's kind of growing tired. I mean, when you've got a bipartisan effort to thwart this nonsense, it's really not working. Shout out Ro Khanna. Shout out Thomas Massie, all great guys. Shout out the Republicans and Democrats who are willing to stand up to crazy nonsense going on within our government and the corporations that lead us today. The lawyers, it's honestly a lot of lawyers. A lot of lawyers. The lawyers, the scientists, the politicians, the heads of Victoria's Secret, the heads of Apollo Global Management. A lot of people involved. But we can roll the clip. Pam Bondi, Pamela Bondi, work your magic in front of the House committee.
To the survivors in the room, if you are willing, please stand. And if you are willing, please raise your hands if you have still not been able to meet with this Department of Justice.
Sorry, narration. Like 11 people stand up from the back row. They were, and they're wearing, you know, like they're wearing the shirts that, you know, signify that they're all within a group. They're a group of victims. All right. And they all raise their hands because they all haven't met with the, you know, with this administration. All right. You continue the clip.
Attorney General Bondi, you apologized to the survivors in your opening statement for what they went through at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein. Will you turn to them now and apologize for what your Department of Justice has put them through with the absolutely unacceptable release of the Epstein files and their information?
Merrick Garland sat in this chair twice.
Attorney General,
she doesn't turn around.
Can I finish my answer?
No, this is not about anybody that came before you. It is about you.
They're sitting behind Pam Bondi. She hasn't turned around.
Department of Justice and the harm that it has done to the survivors who are standing right behind you.
They're like 20 feet behind her.
To turn to them and apologize for what your Department of Justice has done.
Members get to ask the questions. The witness gets to answer in the way they want to answer.
They're 20 feet away and they're still standing. She hasn't turned around yet.
I'm not going to get in the gutter for her theatrics.
Your deputy, Todd Blanche, met alone with Ghislaine Maxwell and transferred her to a minimum security prison.
Ghislaine Maxwell still in a minimum security prison.
And I wish that you would turn around to the survivors who are standing right behind you.
She still hasn't turned around.
Chairman,
she now recognizes the chairman.
On what you have done, I yield back.
The gentlelady, you have no time.
She yielded back. Pam Bondi's laughing. She hasn't turned around. Ladies and gentlemen, that is our Attorney General standing 20 feet in front of victims for, and I want to be very clear about this. The Epstein files, the Epstein case was something that this presidential administration ran on. They ran on, we are going to, I mean, in that sense, drain the swamp. They were, day one, we're going to release the Epstein files. Pam Bondi walks out. She's holding the Epstein files in a book, and we don't get them. It takes months. It takes months for the American people to get to see just exactly what those Epstein files. And I'll be very clear with you. They were not the size of that booklet she was waving around. That was 100% empty. Guaranteed empty. The photo op she did months ago with a fake book like that was supposed to be the Epstein files. And now she's testifying in front of the House committee, and she won't turn and apologize to survivors. She'll say it on paper. She won't look at them. They're 20 feet. It's not even that hard. All you had to do was turn around. You're sitting there in your little seat in front of your mic. And they're getting photo ops. I'm looking at Wall Street Journal's beautiful photography of Pam Bondi. It honestly looks closer from here, but I think they're about 20 feet away. It looks closer in the photo. But they are right there. They're at her eye level. They're standing there. She doesn't want to turn around. It's victims of Jeffrey Epstein. And the ages range. This wasn't the ages, the genders, the races range because of how prolific this was. That's something I don't think people really can wrap their head around, is that real people were affected by this. It's not just Virginia Giuffre. All right, Virginia Giuffre really started it because she was a front runner in that documentary that was released in, I believe, 2020, that really led to a boom in infamy for Epstein and Maxwell. But, you know, there were real people affected by this. The reason that Epstein was first arrested on his first count back in the aughts was because a high schooler got into drama with her friend, and the friend called her a lady of the night. I mean, she was a high schooler. She was like 17. And the school administrators went into her stuff. They found $300 in cash. The girl lied and said that she got it working fast food, and then she broke, and then she admitted everything. This was a high schooler. This could be your child. This could be your child. These weren't, I mean, she was living in a normal situation. Her parents weren't friends with Jeffrey Epstein. They didn't say, hey, go take my daughter. No. This is something that you too, your children, if you are young, this is something that could have happened to you. And deep down, I think that Pam Bondi, look, I don't believe that Pam Bondi is uniquely evil, right? I mean, I bet she's making a band. There are things that I would do for a check too, but that is not one of them. I think it's a moment of profound weakness, and I hope that the people who are behind this, the people who are playing defense for what's going on in our country, the reckoning we're facing, and the sheer inability of our executive to even give the American people a little bit of vindication over this. You know how many people have been arrested over this? No one. It's been Epstein and Maxwell. Those are the only two people who have been arrested. No one has been arrested. No one's been charged. The people involved in this are walking free. Ro Khanna said that there were at least six people in the files that were released to us that they were redacted. But as soon as you redact the names, you'd have something to charge them with and convict. And what are we doing? We're doing nothing. Ghislaine Maxwell went up in front of Congress and she pled the fifth all the way down the line. And she says, her attorney says the only way she's going to testify is if she's granted clemency. What did we give her the minimum security prison for then? What did we give her the sweetheart life sentence deal for? She should be in a supermax. She should be in an 8x3 staring at a brick wall. She doesn't want to testify in front of Congress. She doesn't want to give any sort. She doesn't want to give any sort of grace to these victims. She doesn't want to do good in the world. It's about her, and we've got her in a minimum security prison. She's crocheting and watching TV. She's watching the Nats game. I don't know about that. I assume she wouldn't watch the Nats game. I don't know who would, but. That's the point is, when the UK learned that their ambassador to the US had ties to Epstein, they kicked him out. When they learned their prince had ties to Epstein, they kicked him out. They almost essentially revolted against their prime minister because he appointed a guy who was friends with Epstein. Why are we doing half measures in the United States? Why can't we smell the roses, smell what's right, and do something about it? And all of this is to say that I was supposed to tell you what moral hazard is. Moral hazard, you take a look at what I just yelled about for 10 minutes. That's what moral hazard is. I get on here at 10 p.m. and I yell about things. And sometimes I get really soft and I talk about things like they're very important and I want you to hear every single word. But I'm still kind of yelling because this isn't my voice. This isn't how I speak. If you want to find how I normally speak, you're going to have to meet me in person because I don't talk like this in real life. I'm on the radio. This is like the internet. This is like when you're in Xbox game chat for me. This is who I am deep down when there is no camera and it's just me and a microphone and no one listening on FM radio, WCFM, College Park 90.5. I forgot what I was saying, but Moral Hazard is here with you. Moral Hazard is here with you every Thursday to talk about what's going on in the world, what's wrong, what's right, and what is twisted. Twisted. I'm getting sidetracked. We mostly focus on business news, markets, policy, economics. That's the main focus. Sometimes we talk about things that are tangentially related. Yeah. How could you say Jeffrey Epstein is not business news? We were able to see the financials of Leon Black because of the Epstein files. I mean, that sounds beautiful to me. But yeah, I like Leon Black. I like Apollo Global Management. It's not my favorite. My favorite wealth manager is probably Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon manages my personal wealth as the host of Moral Hazard. Obviously, I am a nine-figure millionaire. Okay, look, I've got money. I've got money. You think I get up here and I talk on the radio for free? No one even listens to the radio. I do this to enrich myself. I have sponsors, although we call them donors, because this is structured as a nonprofit entity. Well, we're more like an OpenAI nonprofit, where we have a nonprofit arm and a for-profit arm, because the government is so stupid that they don't understand how those things are kind of... contradict each other, right? To have a nonprofit and a for-profit arm to a company that's raising money at insane billion-dollar valuations. I mean, that sounds a little crazy to me. That doesn't sound crazy to you. But that's just OpenAI. Moral Hazard, we do real good things here. We're here for the people. And though I may take a check, I will always give you the... No one can pay me not to give you guys business news, commentary, markets, politics, economics. Except for like a source of employment. To be fair, I'm not going to be here forever, guys. I'm going to get a job. And I'm going to be gone. But until then, I'm here with you. I'm here with you. I'm telling you news. I'm telling you markets, business news, markets, politics, economics. 2026, it's a wild world. It's nothing like 2016, fellas. This is not... The thing about 2016 is that was 2016. Now it's 2026. And the world has never been so strange. Bitcoin's on track to being the same price it was in 2016. We just give them some more time on that one. But yeah, I mean, what's nice about the Epstein files is that, we are able to get a look into Leon Black's financials, which is really fun because, Jeffrey Epstein was so gracious. It was so gracious of him to do a background check on his friend's finances. Leon Black was his friend and he was pocket watching Leon Black. He was pocket watching his friend. But yeah, like Jeffrey Epstein somehow knew the balances in his bank accounts, all that. It's crazy. And so what we can look at here is from Wall Street Journal. We can see how exactly he spends money, which is very fun. Because, you know, for those of you who aren't rich like me, I mean, this might seem strange to you. I mean, a guy who spends... this is from the first 2 months of 2015. So divide that by two and you'll get how much he spends in a month. Okay. Clothing, $35,000 in the first 2 months of 2015, $13,000 of it was spent at Bergdorf Goodman, which is like, he bought five things at Bergdorf. Like that's not even that crazy. Like that's a normal amount of money to spend at Bergdorf. If you go with the mentality of like back to school shopping at the mall at Bergdorf, you walk out with like a Lambo's worth of clothes. First 2 months of 2015 is $35,000 on clothing, $27,000 on dining. Okay, well, here's what's crazy to me. The Wall Street Journal makes special note of this. First 2 months of 2015, he got a $7,700 meal at Joe's Stone Crab in Washington, D.C. I have been there twice. I love Joe's Stone Crab. I've never gotten remotely close to spending $7,700 at Joe's Stone Crab. Okay? It's expensive. But I mean, I think the max I ever spent at Joe's was $300. No, that's not true. Max I ever spent. No, I think it was just about $300. Yes. But I mean, I've never gotten that close. I don't know what it must have been, like a family. It must have been like an event for like a dinner party or something he was throwing at Joe's Stone Crab. Because they're, I mean, you can look them up. They're right in D.C. They're right by the White House. I had in my freshman year, I'm a member of PAD, Phi Alpha Delta, and that's the pre-law fraternity here at UMD. We had our formal at Joe's Stone Crab. And it was amazing. Chef's kiss. I became obsessed with the place. I went maybe either two or three other times on my... No, I've been... Oh, goodness. I've been to Joe's Stone Crab probably four times now. But I've only picked up the bill twice. The other times it was with a close associate of Epstein. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know what... He's got the secret menu or something where you can somehow spend $7,700... to be fair, if you get like the caviar stuff, I think it will start rocketing up because that's one of the high margin things. But yeah, I like Joe's Stone Crab. That felt good to me. All right, I've never been to Bergdorf. I would like to go, but it seems like with Saks Fifth going under, Bergdorf is going to have a little bit of a struggle. You gotta get there quick before they run out, before they sell themselves out to TJ Maxx. So that's actually. Saks Fifth, it's a upscale department store. So they own, it's Saks Fifth. I believe they own Neiman Marcus as well, and they own Bergdorf Goodman. But they are going out of business. They went bankrupt a little later last year. And the whole thing is that they're trying to figure out where they go from here because their debt. Their loans are being priced at pennies on the dollar. Some you can't even sell because they're like literally at like 3 cents on the dollar. Like it's, there's no point in even selling it. But yeah, so they're going out of business. If they go into liquidation, so there's bankruptcy and there's liquidation. Liquidation is when the bankruptcy is just so bad that they're just going to divvy up what's owed, sell what's left, and just try and recoup whatever cost is required to pay off vendors, debtors, and all that. I mean, shareholders get nothing, to be clear. Equity owner in a liquidation, equity owners get nothing because you can't even pay off the debt with the cash value, with the fire sale value of everything. But if they do go into liquidation, a lot of Saks Fifth's inventory will be sold to companies like Burlington and TJ Maxx. And there is a world in which Burlington will hold all of the Rick Owens from Saks Fifth. They'll own all of the Stone Ocean. They'll be holding on to, obviously not the Cartier, but like the Laura Piana, all the fancy Adidas, Stan Smith, whatever. That's a world I like to see. I'd like to go to the Greenbelt in Burlington and pick out a Canada Goose jacket. I'm praying. I'm hoping and praying. I don't hope and pray for bankruptcies very often or liquidations because I'm a stone cold capitalist. But I would like to get some cool clothes for the cheap. And I haven't gone to Burlington in a very long time, but you know, Saks Fifth liquidates, however that sale's working, I want a piece of that. I want a piece. Maybe I'll put in a bid for their inventory if they go into liquidation. I'll outbid Burlington to fill my closet with ridiculous clothing at a dirt cheap price. But yes, so if you live in the area, I'm sure you know of Arundel Mills Mall. Arundel Mills Mall has a Saks Fifth discount retailer. It's called Saks Off Fifth. And what they do there, if you've ever been, is they sell you cheap Amiri tees. That's literally all they sell. They sell Amiri tees. They sell skinny jeans. Like, discount retailers are a scam. People used to think that you go into a discount retailer, you're getting Saks Fifth quality, you're getting Nike quality, you're getting Adidas quality at Burlington price. That's not how it works. They put the low quality stuff there. If you've ever been to like a factory outlet, like J. Crew factory outlet, I've gone there before. I don't shop there because the clothing is objectively worse quality. If anything, they are robbing you because they are selling you Burlington quality clothes. They're selling you Ross quality clothes, but it's got the J. Crew label on it, and it's somewhere between Ross prices and J. Crew prices. It should be Ross prices, but it's not. But yeah, don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. But yes, yeah, so Saks OFF 5TH closed 2 weeks ago. They had a major clearance sale. I was contemplating going, and then I remembered that I would never wear anything that they sell. What am I going to do wearing an Amiri tee? I'm not Balkan. I'm not Balkan, and I'm not from Atlanta. There's nothing I could do with Saks OFF 5TH clothing. But for some people, maybe. But I didn't do the promo on the show, so it's too late for you guys. You missed out. There are other Saks OFF 5TH locations. I believe there are none remaining in Maryland. But there are, I believe there are still maybe like 10 to 15 Saks OFF 5TH locations remaining in the country. I don't know when they will be closing. I think they're on a schedule to close within the next month. So check it out. Maybe if that's something you're into, wearing Amiri tees and low quality skinny jeans, you know, maybe that could be you. All right. I'm not going to put it past you, dear listener, because I'm not saying it's not something anyone should do, but it's not something I would do. Okay. I mean, it's a $50 t-shirt. What am I going to do with that? What do I need a $50 t-shirt for? First of all, it's winter. Most of the year, you cannot go out rocking a fancy t-shirt. Because first of all, no one cares that you're wearing a fancy t-shirt. That's first of all. Second of all, an Amiri t-shirt at a bar in the summer? Oh my God. You might as well be wearing a plain white tee. Everyone is going to be out wearing their Saks OFF 5TH Amiri tee. All right, because if you shop at Saks OFF 5TH, you probably wanted Amiri tees to begin with. It's not my thing. Most people don't like it, to my understanding. You know, when a guy shows up with the black skinny jeans, the white graphic tee. My God, what a uniform! What a uniform! I've seen there are at any point at a night in the on a Friday night during the summer. You with your white graphic tee and your black skinny jeans, there are 40 million Americans wearing the exact same thing at the exact same time as you. Does that, there are 40 million Americans and 50 million Balkans wearing the exact same thing as you in that moment. Does that give you pause? Does that make you think, yeah, maybe I should wear something else? Maybe this isn't impressing people how I thought it would. My Amiri tee. God. Maybe I gotta go home. I gotta change it to my Supreme t-shirt. No one likes my Amiri tee. I gotta wear the Supreme t-shirt. No, I mean, whatever. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. We're looking at Leon Black's financials. Leon Black, shout out, Apollo Global Management. Look, I'm gonna be honest. These asset managers, these wealth managers, they don't handle themselves well. Once you get into that it's not bulge bracket, but once you get into that upper echelon of wealth managers and asset management, you get bloated. You get bloated. And I mean, I've seen it. PGIM, Prudential Global Investment Management. They are so bloated. They're so fattened by their investments in real estate and multifamilies. They can't even manage what they're buying. They are selling it off at a loss. They're not milking it, and they're letting people who actually know how to manage things and have enough and are willing to spare the resources to have a team and are willing to put the effort into looking at their properties and doing research. And they're cleaning house. I know guys that their fund's entire premise is just picking off the bones that giants like PGIM and BlackRock leave behind because they're lazy and they're slow. No one's agile anymore. It's gotten to the point where these large funds will invest in these smaller hyena funds to pick off their own scraps. It doesn't even make sense. No, I mean, that's just private equity. I mean, don't even get me started on private equity continuance funds. That is the most ridiculous. That is the most pyramid scheme thing I've ever heard of in my life. But I'm not going to go into that. Leon Black's financials. I'm getting distracted. We haven't even finished the personal expenses section. Okay, so we took care of clothing. We took care of dining. He spent $67,000 on wine and liquor in 2 months. What? I mean, I don't even... That's a level of expenditure that borders on stupidity. Because I know he can't tell the difference between a $1,000 wine and a $50 wine from the local liquor store. That at some point, we have to say Reagan was right about trickle-down economics. This is the wealth effect. You give people enough money, they spend it on dumb stuff. But yeah, $67,000 on wine and liquor, $75,000 on art, very small amount. I'm impressed that Leon Black was able to show such restraint with his family office and not spend $3 million on art in the span of 2 months. And then there's an other section that's $41,000, whatever. But that's just personal expensive, because here we go to residencies, and he paid $52,000 in utilities alone over 2 months, which honestly, when I think about it, that's not even that bad. That shows to me that whatever properties he's owning, he isn't engorged on them. He's not underwater on them. He's not paying crazy amounts in utilities. $50,000 in utilities over 2 months? I mean, I could see it. I could see it. I believe that also goes towards, no, that doesn't, oh, shoot. No, that's utilities alone. That was, because in my mind, that could possibly contain HOA fees. No, there's a separate section. Okay, so never mind. Utilities, $52,000. So that's electricity, HVAC, gas, water. It was crazy. I don't know what kind of data. He probably had a data center, personal data center. I mean, he's got a family office, maybe. School taxes, $149,000. Renovations, $48,000 in renovations. 2 months, not bad for, I mean, that's a normal amount of expenditure for renovations. But I mean, I would assume that that was on the low end of a year, 2 months out of a year. Property taxes, spent $105,000 in property taxes. At least he's paying his taxes. Landscaping, $71,000. He needed to cut up the little shaped hedge to look like Jeff Bezos's head. Maintenance and maintenance fees. So this would include HOA, $93,000 just about. And then other 78. So now we're kind of getting a picture of just how rich Leon Black is, right? In 2 months, you know, he's throwing around. It's Monopoly money to him. I mean, not even Monopoly money does not get thrown around this easy. Professional services, whatever that means, $106,000. Why is he hiring professional services out of his personal account? He has a family office. They all have family. All the billionaires have family offices. He doesn't need to be charging professional services out of a personal account. So I don't know what that is. Maybe that was like a Stormy Daniels type professional service. I don't know. Credit cards. He's still... Shout out Leon Black. $5 billion. He's worth $5 billion. He's got credit cards. He spent $74,000 in credit cards over 2 months. Insurance and medical, $73,000. That's the insurance plan that, I don't know, does like the age reversing or something. Who cares? He only spent $25,000 on his private plane. This is great. $900 on car washes, $10,000 on hotels, $30,000 on other travel. Donated $25,000 in educational donations. Spent $13,000 on clubs and hobbies. He bought 3 guitars. I made that up. And then private school, $545. private school, $545? What was he, books? I don't know what he was could have possibly been buying. But yes, this deep dive into the financials of Lee and Black is all thanks to Jeffrey Epstein. If you enjoyed this segment, write a letter to Pam Bondi and ask her to petition Trump to grant clemency to Ghislaine Maxwell. It's the least you can do. She's grieving, all right? Her friend / ex-boyfriend died in prison in 2019. You know, give her space, all right? She's doing like an Erica Kirk type grieving where she goes and pleads the fifth in front of Congress and then says, I'm only going to help these victims if you grant me clemency. We've got like this is a black hole in the heart. And I think that's a common problem with people in this world. People don't want to do good by other people. And I'm the same. I don't want to help. Look. All right. I've read Marx. I've read quotes from Marx. I haven't read Marx. I've read quotes from Marx. What did he say? Hold on. Wait. What did Cormac say? Hold on. No. I've read Marx. Yeah, hold on. Let me think of something. From each according to his ability to each according to his need. Yeah. That wasn't very pronoun inclusive of you, Karl Marx, but I get it. I don't believe that I should help people because who am I to help people? When I can't even help myself. I'm just a helpless little member of the middle class, guys. I'm just a small little member of the middle class. You should make everyone richer than me help. Because right where I am actually on the border of wealthy and dead broke. So like everyone richer than me needs to help me and everyone poorer than me. But mostly me, so that I can become rich. And then just kind of shift that goalpost a little or something. I don't know. Yeah, look, I'll be honest. Like, you know, I was left leaning until I had to pay taxes. All right. That's, you know, it's pretty tough. The idea that I have to pay for my government to let Ghislaine Maxwell extort Congress despite already extorting the government. You know, what am I paying for? What am I paying my federal taxes for? I'm paying for something, I guess. Maybe it's for I'm paying my federal taxes so Kristi Noem can get more Botox injections. So Kristi Noem can fire her pilot for forgetting her blanket on the plane. That's a real thing. That's a real thing. This is Wall Street Journal. Kristi Noem blanket. Let me double check this. Yes. Noem and Lewandowski frequently berate senior level staff. They give polygraph tests to employees they don't trust. They have fired employees for nothing. There's this one incident that the Wall Street Journal recounts where Lewandowski fired a U.S. Coast Guard pilot because he forgot Kristi Noem's... Sorry, did I say... I forgot what I said her name was before. Yeah, he forgot Kristi Noem's blanket on the plane. That, first of all, he's the pilot. Why is it his job to make sure you didn't leave your blanket on the plane? Keep in mind, he stays on the plane. When you go, plane keep moving. You should be firing whoever was responsible for the blanket and decided to leave it on the plane. Oh, wait, that was Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem was wearing the blanket, and then she left it, didn't keep track of it, left the plane, fires the pilot, because how dare the pilot fly away with your blanket on the plane? Kristi Noem is ridiculous. Corey Lewandowski, I mean, whatever. Corey Lewandowski, he's just a little grunt, all right? Kristi Noem's a certified diva. Kristi Noem is a certified diva. Does she even have a college degree? South Dakota State University? Well, I mean, I can't. Oh, goodness. Wow. Look, I know everyone has their own right to do like to modify their face as much as they want. But come on. You're a public servant. Why are you up here looking like Trump's wife? This is ridiculous. Christy, no. Okay. And she's got the hair extensions are not doing Christy Noem any favors, all right? She needs to go back to that, like, the 2019 Karen haircut. I'm sorry. Noem attended Northern State University from 1990 to 1994, but did not graduate. You spent 4 years in college, didn't graduate. All right, that makes sense. In 1994, her father... Oh, okay. She didn't get kicked out. She left because her dad was killed in a grain bin accident. Did he fall in the grain bin? A family of geniuses. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Christy Noem, much like her dad, is borderline stupid. Sorry. I mean, it could have been a freak grain bin accident. I think people die in grain bins all the time, actually. Honestly, I don't even think you can fault... I don't know. I'm not a farmer. I mean, the fact that he was a farmer, she came from a family of farmers, that's respectable. I can... Props to Christy Noem for running the family farm. All right? I'm sorry I laughed at your dad. It's not... That wasn't nice of me. You are dumb, though. Your dad's not dumb. You are dumb. The apple does fall far from the tree. Yeah. Oh, what? Okay, I think they were, like, rich farmers or something. It says that she added a hunting lodge and a restaurant to the family property. I don't know what kind of farm this one is. But yeah, so Christy Noem, she took classes at Mount Marty College and at SDSU. She took online classes from USD, University of South Dakota, and she got a BA in poli sci in 2012 while serving as a U.S. representative? She won the election to the U.S. House of Representatives with no college degree? How did she get elected? Who was she running against? And you know what? She might have been the most qualified person in South Dakota. No offense to all my Dakotans out there. But Christy Noem, you're not leading with a strong foot here. All I know about South Dakota is that Christy Noem's from there, that it's not North Dakota, and that the capital is Pierre, all right? Which is nowhere near as cool as Bismarck, North Dakota. Now, that is a cool capital name. That is... Ah, dude, that's so sick. Yeah, I'm from Bismarck. Dude, that, you know, that sounds so cool, right? That reminds me of Bismarcky. That's the rapper. Yeah, I know, we're at the radio station. I'm going to tell you about some music. Bismarcky, the rapper that made that song, Just a Friend. I think that was Bismarcky. Yeah, Just a Friend. You got what I need, but you say he's just a friend. You say he's just a friend. Yeah, that's a good song. Shout out Bismarcky. Shout out Bismarck, North Dakota. Don't shout out South Dakota. She won a seat in the House of Representatives in 2006. So she would have been, I'm not even doing the math on that, but she would have been 10 years out of not graduating college. Then she went and got a college degree. She got a college degree 6 years into serving as a representative. What did we elect you for? Am I the only one who thought that we would be electing people to public office, one of the highest public offices in the nation, based on the fact that they have some personal experience, private knowledge, as scholars of epistemology would say? they would have some private knowledge that would make them more informed in representing us than just being a conduit for the rage of the people. Like, there's to some degree technocracy. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, we see what Kristi Noem did. She got her online college degree. And now she's the head of the DHS. And she's firing hardworking pilots for leaving her blanket on the plane, which should have been her responsibility. Maybe if she got a BS, she would have, instead of a Bachelor of Arts online, then maybe she would know how to, you know, how to assign responsibility to things. Although I'm pretty sure any college degree, any high school education, middle school education, maybe if she just had some parental figures, then they would tell her that you can't really fire people for leaving your blanket on the plane. But sorry. Wishful thinking. This is ridiculous. We've got the biggest numbskull running the DHS. She's throwing temper tantrums at 54 years old. She's 54 years old firing people over a blanket. Get a new one. God knows you make enough money. What, did you spend it all on filler? On those hair extensions? My God. And what baffles me is that people in the administration want Kristi Noem fired. People want her fired. Trump won't budge because she's hot. I get it. Not real. I mean, I don't get it. But, like, I get the idea of, like, no, you can't fire her. But she's so cute and funny. I get that. Every manager, every wealth manager has personality. They call them personality hires, quote unquote. No one hires you actually. No personality hire is actually there because they're a personality hire. Okay. Someone likes you. That's it. And I don't get it personally because I don't suffer fools to that extent. But I understand Trump's human. All right. When he's in those cabinet meetings, he doesn't want to be looking at, like, a bunch of Condoleezza Rices and Hillary Clintons and Colin Powell's, all right? He wants a country girl. Oh, God. I mean, this is ridiculous. They need to fire her, and they don't want to. It's right now. The executive of our country, the executive department of our country, is being run by Donald Trump and Stephen Miller, who's like a cross of Jeff Bezos and the sheep from Zootopia, the little evil sheep lady from Zootopia. That's essentially Stephen Miller. And you know, everyone else is just fodder. Everyone else is just camera fodder. No one knows how to do their job. Kash Patel is flying his failed country artist girlfriend around the country. Still doesn't get fired for that. He shut off months ago because he was using the FBI private jet to fly his girlfriend out for her concerts, her world tour. Kash Patel is doing nonsense. JD Vance, find him. He's looking for a new couch. I mean, it's ridiculous. Howard Lutnick is in the Epstein files. Close relationship. He's commerce secretary. He doesn't even do anything. Scott Bessent is the one doing all the work. We've got people leaving left and right. I admit, Michael Faulkner, please go back. Everyone's gone. Stephen Miron's gone. Faulkner's gone. Everyone who knows a thing about how things are supposed to go, anyone who knows a thing or two is gone. It's Stephen Miller and just a cabinet filled with, like, the dumbest people you've ever met. And then no one's even... Here's the thing. I get hiring dumb people, okay? Especially in a position like the presidency. Because you wouldn't want people questioning you. When Tulsi Gabbard is against, you know, blowing up Venezuela and kidnapping the president, you don't want her in that room, right? You want someone who'll just say, Yeah, let's do that. But you don't want people this dumb because you can't even put them in front of a camera. You can't put Kristi Noem in front of a camera. You can't put Kosh Patel in front of a camera. He's going to say, we have the watch. I'll see you in Valhalla, brother. Kristi Noem's doing her hair for 30 minutes to take a picture in front of people in essentially a concentration camp in El Salvador. Howard Lutnick is between Trump's cabinet. Across the cabinet, you can't find a person who is both sober and not trying to pick up high schoolers. All right? I guarantee you. Howard Lutnick, drop your location right now. I bet you are at the middle school. I bet you are at a D.C. public middle school right now. Scoping it out after hours. He's in the bathrooms wiring cameras. He's a creep. And he doesn't even do his job. Scott Bessent's doing his job. Pete Hegseth. Pete Hegseth probably does his job best when he's taped to a bottle of scotch. What is going on? And all of this is to say that what we've got here is possibly the greatest amount of corruption within our executive, within the executive of the United States. This is possibly the highest amount of corruption, even far beyond what was going on with Nixon or what was going on, man, I'm blanking on that. During the Grant era. Or was it Rutherford B. Hayes? You know, far beyond anything that's happened before in this country. This is South Africa levels of corruption. This is Guyana levels of corruption. This is country you can't even name when you point to it on the map corruption. We look at our White House. We've got it inlaid with gold. Does that scream reliable, trustworthy trading partner with? Or does that scream, oh my God, these people are going to literally kill us if we even talk to them. If we look them in the eye, they're going to try and kill us. They're animals. This is the most animalistic, the most depraved. This is the most craven. It's the most cowardly our nation has been from a leadership perspective. We can't even look at ourselves in the mirror and say we did something wrong. Time to pay the piper. Time to do something right by the American people. And I didn't even get to talk about the business news. We have a PSA coming up. I have to do these every hour. You know what? This one's brought to you by Pete Hegseth, probably, or something. I don't know.
Might you be buzzed when you suddenly love everything?
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
Don't drunk drive. Don't be Pete Hegseth, guys. Be more like, who's someone who doesn't drunk drive in the Trump administration? I don't want to... Be more like Stephen Miron. Don't drunk drive. Just... Be cool. Be chill. Just sit around and, you know, leave when it's safe. Okay? Guys, be safe. When the people you look to for inspiration, when you're 7 years old and you say, who do I want to be when I grow up? I want to be the president. I want to be the chair of the Federal Reserve. I want to be Howard Lutnick. Don't, you can't say that anymore. But you will say that you will be responsible. All right? You won't drink and drive. Just say no. Don't be like Ronald Reagan couldn't say no when the Nicaraguans offered drugs for guns. He couldn't say no. I forgot what exactly the deal was there. When, you know, Ronald Reagan just couldn't say no. But don't look to him for inspiration. Look to real people. All right. Everyone wants to look to Jeff Bezos. They want to look to Mark Zuckerberg. I want to start a SaaS company when I grow up. I want to be like Peter Thiel. No, you don't want to be Peter Thiel. All right. You don't want to be Sam Altman. You don't want to be the guy who runs YC. I hate his face. The little guy who runs YC. You know, look to your mom and dad. Look to your trusted adult. Look to the good people who stand by you and do good by you and are selfless. All right. Look to like Nelson Mandela or something. I don't know. Don't look to people who act in their best interest. That's playing a finite game. You need to know this, that as a little bit of game theory, all right? Existentially, we'd all be better off if we played as if we were in an infinite game. The game doesn't end when you die. The game doesn't end when you die and you go on to the next plane of existence or whatever. It all turns black. Bop. The game ends when the sun explodes and humanity finally is wiped out for good, okay? You need to keep in mind who comes after you. The children that will look at the TV and see, hey, mommy, why is Pam Bondi not looking at those 11 people standing behind her? That's not right. You about to stand up and do what's right. I'm waiting for someone to stand up and do what's right, you know? I'm yet to know if Ro Khanna really cares about the Epstein files, or he's just, you know, teeing up for presidential bid. Can Ro Khanna run for president? Well, Ro Khanna can run for president. Sorry, I wasn't sure if he was born in the United States. Okay, yeah, he was. He's born in Philly. Ah, nice. Yeah, so I'm not sure if he actually believes in anything or he's just teeing up a presidential bid. Gavin Newsom was doing the same thing with his knee pads. Oh, Gavin Newsom won't do good, though. Maybe Ro Khanna. Maybe Kristi Noem. Maybe Kristi Noem should be the president. you know, great people all around. Friend of the show, Kristi Noem. But yeah, that's going to wrap it up for tonight on Moral Hazard. We covered a lot of ground. We talked about a little bit of business news, a little bit of Leon Black, and, you know, mostly Pam Bondi not learning how to turn her head. But yeah, I hope you guys have a great week. There's another great show coming up after me. I'm going to learn the name of the show at one point. What's the name of the show? Smith Island Cake. Like the cake. It's really good. I've had it before. It's good cake. But yes, the show Smith Island Cake is coming up after me. Stay tuned. Have a good week, everybody. I'll see you all next Thursday at 10 p.m. Bye. Fake smile, I'm zombie proof.
no killing me. Nice, this, no enemy. Pop, 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 my color, my energy, headless.